good morning. You're listening to 88.7 WHCL-FM Clinton. I'm your host, Pete Bianco. This show is titled The Ringer. This morning, my guest is Dr. Joyce Young. Dr. Young, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on.
I decided to have you on specifically because you seem to be the only person I've heard talking about the dangers of fragrances, and it seems like a very underreported topic. Would you like to tell us a little about your credentials first, and then tell us about the dangers of fragrances?
Certainly. I'm a naturopathic medical doctor. We're the third group of primary care general practice board certified medical doctors in this country, along with MDs and DOs. I'm an N period, D period. We're trained exactly like MDs, and my area of expertise is alternative analysis of chronic complex diseases and illnesses in all ages, with a special interest in environmental medicine, which asks the question, what are all the 100,000 chemicals and their mixtures in air, water, food, and consumer products doing to folks? I went back to school in 1997. I'm a research biologist by training. I specifically went back to get a medical degree to continue my study of environmental medicine. And it's been 15 years since I started this medical school route. And the situation with environmental chemicals, including fragrances, is much worse than it was even in 1997.
And how many chemicals have we been exposed to between those times? What's the rise?
I don't think that they really have a rise per se. The number that is always thrown out is 100,000 chemicals, and there's about 1,000 new ones each year that come on the market. The big problem, there's two big problems. One, that that there's the problem with mixtures. We are not exposed to just one chemical at a time. We're exposed to mixtures, and the mixtures are an unattainable feat to try to analyze because there's an inexhaustible supply of mixtures out there, and including fragrances. You can have what I have read is you can have upwards of 600 to thousands of different chemicals in one fragrance product that we call fragrance. The other problem is one that because I'm trained extensively in chemistry and biochemistry, that these chemicals, when they're processed by any living organism, including human bodies, these are all synthetic hydrocarbon chemicals, and they are broken down into what they call metabolic breakdown products. And a lot of the metabolic breakdown products are more toxic than the original substance itself. So you see, there's multiple problems here. That in addition to the 100,000 chemicals, the inexhaustible supply of mixtures, you've got all the metabolic breakdown products of all these chemicals.
So where are some of the places that people are getting exposed to these fragrances?
Well, let me first say that my sister Sandy Radomski and I have self-published starting in 1997-98, a series of informational brochures, and one of them is on fragrance. And for all of your listeners, you can actually access information and see the brochure at the website www.healthbrochures.info. healthbrochures.info. And we keep updating all the brochures, including the fragrance brochure, And in the newest edition, Fragrance, A Growing Health and Environmental Hazard, we have a whole listing of products that may contain fragrance chemicals. And we call them fragrance chemicals specifically because one of the most common questions that's asked is, what about essential oils? And we put essential oils into this category because from the peer-reviewed medical literature, it's quite clear that plant essences, which as a botanist, I have a master's degree in botany also. I have a bachelor's degree in biology and a master's degree in botany. Plant essences are essential oils. And it's well known in the endocrinology literature that exposure to tea tree and lavender essential oil, for starters, is associated with breast development in adolescent males.
Wow.
It was actually even published in one of the endocrinology journals, and the Associated Press picked this up. And there were large articles in about 2007-2008. So products that may contain fragrance chemicals, laundry products like laundry detergent, fabric softeners, dryer sheets, bleach and bleach powders, personal care products, soaps, bar and liquid soap, hand sanitizers. Hey, it's all over the place right now.
Mm-hmm.
Including in schools, and this is a huge problem in schools right now. Hair products, hairsprays, shampoos, conditioners, gels, colorings, cosmetics, hand and body lotions, bath powders and oils, deodorants, antiperspirants, shaving creams, and the aftershaves. And then there's perfumes and colognes, which people still use, nail polish and polish removers. Then and there's the whole category of household products. There's plug-in or spray air fresheners, which that's an oxymoron. They don't freshen the air. They chemically contaminate the air. Deodorizers, toilet blocks, dishwashing detergents, all-purpose cleaners, disinfectants, waxes, tissues, toilet paper, plastic bags like trash bags and kitchen bags are all full of fragrance. Disposable diapers, these are right on the skin of infants, and they're absorbed, the fragrances and the other chemicals are absorbed right through the skin. Toys, clothing, fabrics, books, papers, marking pens, a lot of marking pens, especially marketed towards children, are scented. Oh, doesn't this smell good? These are all synthetic scents. Incense is a major problem. A lot of it is coming from India. Heaven only knows what's in it. Candles, huge problem. Potpourris, kitty litter, pesticides. A lot of pesticides have fragrances in them.
Wow.
Other products, there's food additives that are actually fragrance chemicals, so that you think of fragrance chemicals as we say on the front of our brochure, fragrance advertising and packaging make you think fragrances and products are made from flowers, fruits, herbs, and spices. They actually contain toxic chemicals you inhale and absorb through your skin. Now, I had just heard from somebody yesterday from a patient, actually, did I know that the food manufacturers were now going to put fragrances in the packaging of different kinds of food to help lure people in. Because fragrances, I mean, if you go to a mall and you smell the cookie smell, the honey bun smell,
mm-hmm.
a lot of that is actually chemically synthesized fragrances that they put out into the air to try to allure you into coming in and consuming, buying and consuming.
That's unbelievable.
And Okay. Other products, food additives, yeah. Advertising in magazines, it's a huge problem. I just canceled my, I'm down here on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. I just canceled my subscription to the Cape Cod Times newspaper a couple of months ago because there were all these fragrance inserts that kept falling out of the newspaper, and the whole entire newspaper was saturated with this vile-smelling fragrance.
Mm.
Interesting enough, to help empower all of your listeners, that it is a huge problem, and that you can do something about it. As we say in our fragrance brochure, fragrance is a, quote, recognized hazard, unquote, by the CDC. The CDC is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, the big watchdog to keep all of us healthy. You would think that that if fragrance is a recognized hazard by the CDC, and in our brochure we tell about the policies from an internal memo of the CDC that was somehow leaked out, apparently, that, quote, employees should avoid using scented detergents and fabric softeners on clothes worn to the office, unquote. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, issued an indoor environmental quality policy June of 2009, that's already 3 years ago, to provide 14,000 CDC employees in over 54 countries, quote, a safe place of employment and free of recognized hazards, unquote. This is pretty clear, huh?
Very.
To protect the health of workers. Quote, building occupants, and we've pulled this out, so there's a couple of dots in here. Building occupants, dot, 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 non-permissible products, dot, 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 scented or fragranced products are prohibited at all times, got that, in all interior space owned, rented, or leased by CDC. This includes the use of incense, candles, or reed diffusers, fragrance-emitting devices of any kind, wall-mounted devices similar to fragrance-emitting devices that operate automatically, or by pushing a button to dispense deodorizers or disinfectants, dot-dot-dot potpourri, dot-dot-dot plug-in or spray air fresheners, dot-dot-dot urinal or toilet blocks, dot-dot-dot other fragranced deodor slash reodorizer products, dot, dot, dot. Personal care products, parentheses, for example, colognes, perfumes, essential oils, scented skin and hair products, should not be applied at or near actual workstations, restrooms, or anywhere in CDC-owned or leased buildings, dot, dot, dot. Fragrance is not appropriate for a professional work environment, and the use of some products with fragrance may be detrimental to the health of workers with chemical sensitivities, allergies, asthma, and chronic headaches slash migraines, dot, dot, dot. And then they go on to say, many fragrance-free personal care and laundry products are easily available and provide safer alternatives. Use green cleaning products, fragrance-free and otherwise otherwise less hazardous to human health and the environment.
Dr. Young, the other day I was thinking of you. I knew we had this interview coming up. I was out in public and I saw a pair of dishwashing gloves, and these rubber gloves were scented. I don't know why you would want your gloves to have a scent to them. It just seems like the scent is being marketed in every possible fashion.
Well, one of the reasons that they would put scent in gloves is because a lot of the vinyl and the rubber gloves have a horrific odor to them.
Mm.
That's probably one reason why. And there's a bunch of us that have this strong feeling that the fragrance ingredients are calculated to be addictive. It's actually an addiction. I've actually heard people say, quote, "I just love to walk in front of dryer vents."
Ugh.
Okay, that, unquote, that sounds like an addiction to me. Oh, I just love my heroin. You know, I have to have my heroin. Certain pharmaceutical drugs, certain psychotropic pharmaceutical drugs like Ativan. I had a patient, "I have to have my Ativan." I mean, a lot of these things are very addictive. Why is it so difficult for people to quit quit smoking? Because it's addictive.
What with the endocrine disruption, what effects? I mean, you mentioned that these fragrances can be endocrine disruptors. What does that mean for the body?
What that means is, number one, that they call them endocrine disruptors. They're endocrine hormone disruptors. And the hormones in the body, there are hundreds of different kinds of hormones that run the human body, and they're chemical messenger systems. And it's a very delicately balanced web-like system as to how the control mechanisms in the human body work. And they work with hormone or hormone-type substances. Most people know of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and thyroid hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's well indicated in the literature, I'm watching the wildlife literature too, that those four hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and thyroid, are massively disrupted in wildlife. And what happens in wildlife is a harbinger for what happens in humans. Insulin is a hormone, and it helps the body to process sugar in the blood. And the reality of the situation is that we are in the midst of a pandemic, not just an epidemic, a pandemic around the entire world of both obesity and diabetes. And there are very strong indications that environmental chemicals are strongly associated with this pandemic of obesity and diabetes. Is driving it. And environmental chemicals like endocrine disruptors, endocrine hormone disruptors, I'm watching the literature. It's a lot of this literature is an exploding field right now. But my feeling is that fragrances are a major, major player in this. Fragrances and plastics. Because one chemical that's common to both fragrances and plastics are the chemical group phthalates. That's P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E. It's not just one chemical. It's a whole group of chemicals. And to illustrate the point even more, in the newest issue of a medical journal that I get, peer-reviewed medical journal. It's not rocket science. It's an open-access journal that anyone can Google in. It's called Environmental Health Perspectives. It's volume 120, number 9, September 2012. The article in here, urinary phthalate metabolites. Again, the phthalates break down into other chemicals. Urinary phthalate metabolite concentrations and diabetes among women in the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey from 2001 to 2008. And to read this, I encourage all of your listeners to go to this website to access this medical journal. What I encourage patients to do, read the introduction and read the discussion. You read over what you don't understand. You get the general gist of it all. And it's not rocket science. You can understand it.
I wanted to ask you about the hormones. Are they active at parts per million, or is that parts per billion that they're active in the body?
A lot of the hormones, well, they're active at different levels. And to give you an idea of how small an amount, I heard a lecture by Dr. Tyrone Hayes from the University of California system a couple of years ago on feminization of fishes, because a lot of the literature is starting with other organisms besides humans. It's epidemiological information, like this paper that I just told about in the diabetes, but the lecture of Dr. Tyrone Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S, on feminizations of fishes told about the effects of atrazine, an herbicide that kills weeds. It's one of the most commonly used herbicides in the entire world, and it could cause feminization of fishes at parts per quadrillion.
I don't even know what quadrillion is.
I mean, it's a lot less than a part per million or billion.
Uh-huh.
And how much is it? I mean, they always give the analogy of one drop in a lake.
Wow.
I mean, it's really, really tiny. And one of the big problems right now is that the toxicologists and the Western medicine profession in general are still working on the Paracelsus straight line curve. Small amounts of any kind of chemical, small effects, large amounts, large effects. And in endocrine hormone disruption, that's not what we're seeing. We're seeing a U-shaped curve where ultra small amounts, like atrazine at parts per quadrillion, have massive, massive ramifications on all kinds of living systems. There's especially a lot of concern in the literature about endocrine disruption in fetal life and in developmental stages, whether it's fetal life of humans. They know that the chemicals have invaded the womb. Dr. Theo Colburn, who's one of the top researchers in endocrine hormone disruption and wrote the book, which should be required reading for everybody, Our, O-U-R, Stolen, S-T-O-L-E-N, Future, F-U-T-U-R-E. And it's Theo, T-H-E-O, Colburn, C-O-L-B-O-R-N. And she runs the group, the organization called the Endocrine Disruption Network, and you can Google that in, and there's lots and lots of information on endocrine hormone disruption. She's out in Peonia, Colorado.
How long have these chemicals been in our environment in a big way?
The endocrine disruptors,
yes,
or the fragrances?
The endocrine disruptors in general.
Endocrine disruptors in general... have been around, and this is my personal opinion, they've been around since antiquity.
Mm.
And I'm in the process of writing a book right now that will have a title somewhat like Poisoning by the Ancient Ones, : Heavy Metals, Carbon Monoxide, and Microbial Toxins. They've been around forever.
Mm.
And it is well known that a lot of heavy metals, including mercury, are endocrine hormone, and I'll use the word endocrine hormone disrupting chemicals rather than the more scientifically used word endocrine disruptors, because I think it's more it's easier for the person on the street to understand that we're talking about hormones. Mercury is a major endocrine hormone disrupting chemical, and mercury poisoning, especially from amalgam, silver amalgam dental fillings, mercury dental fillings, was one of the major reasons that I went back to school to get this medical degree. It's widespread and rampant, and how it is contributing, they figure that half to two-thirds of the population have mercury amalgam dental fillings in their mouth at the present time just in the U.S. They still put in 800,000 a day, and mercury poisoning has 500 to 1,000 different symptoms. It's been known for 200-plus years as, quote, the great imitator. It can look like any other diagnosed disease. And when you look back on diseases that we now know look like endocrine hormone disruption, like problems in a fetal life causing babies to be born with ambiguous genitalia, that is endocrine hormone disruption during fetal life. And in the last couple of years, there have been papers that have come out, like the one entitled, "Where Have All the Baby Boys Gone?" It used to be that there were more baby boys born than baby girls. And then, in the last couple of years, it equalized out. There were equal baby boys and baby girls being born. Now, there are fewer baby boys being born than baby girls because the baby boys are being killed off in utero because of endocrine hormone disruption.
Wow.
There's also in this September, to give you an idea, this is all cutting-edge research, in the same September 2012 Environmental Health Perspectives issue, there was also a very interesting article entitled "Phthalate Exposure Changes the Metabolic Profile of Cardiac Muscle Cells." People, you know, I mentioned that there's hundreds of different kinds of hormones that run the body. There's digestive hormones, there's reproductive hormones. Vitamin D is actually not just a vitamin, it is actually a hormone. And we have an epidemic of vitamin D deficiency in this country, even down in sunny South Carolina. Is it just the fact that people are not getting out in the sun or people are using a lot of sunscreen? I don't think so. There's no literature on it, but vitamin D has a very complex pathway in the body to become active, and there's every reason in the world that vitamin D deficiency is like the problems with thyroid hormone. 60% of the population has problems with their thyroid, and the metabolic pathways are very complex. And any of these endocrine disrupting chemicals, common environmental chemicals, has the possibility of disrupting these pathways anywhere along the line. You know, they can mimic the hormones, but it's a lot more complex than that. And with this paper, "Phthalate Exposure Changes the Metabolic Profile of Cardiac Muscle Cells," there are hormones that run the heart.
So do the phthalates come from the plastic manufacturing? Is it a necessary chemical essential to manufacturing plastic?
Yes, the way that you can think about the role of phthalates, both in plastics and in personal care products. Let me start with plastics. A friend of mine is a polymer scientist at University of Massachusetts at Amherst, And even before I went to medical school, he described a wonderful analogy that will help your listeners to understand the composition of plastics. If you put a piece of plastic, for example, a piece of saran wrap, under a high-power microscope, what you're going to see is a lattice work, you know, like a window screen.
Mm.
And there's a framework, and then there's holes in between. And in these holes of the lattice work, you've got these molecules of phthalate and phthalate combinations. You can envision this sphere of this bubble of some kind of greasy fluid that contains phthalates in the hole of the lattice work. The finer the lattice work structure is, the more pliable your plastic is going to be. So that in things like saran wrap, deli wrap, all the flexible plastics, you've got a lot less framework and you've got more phthalates in it.
Mm.
These phthalates do leach even in 1996, before I went to medical school. Even Consumer Reports had an article about a study that they did back at that time where they bought lots of different kinds of cheeses in lots of different kinds of plastic wrappings and sent them to a lot of different laboratories to have the cheese tested for phthalates. And there was, even in 1996, there was massive migration of phthalates into the cheese.
And prior to using plastic in delis, they would wrap cheese in paper?
Yes, that's right. And in fact, you see the same problem. They tested cheese, but you go into any supermarket, even health food stores, and right now it's even worse than ever. It used to be like 85% to 90% of everything, all the food and drink, were encased in plastics. Now, I mean, you look at ketchup, you look at mustard, you look at all your oils, you know, all your drinks and everything. Even at some supermarkets, all the produce is encased in plastic. So it's, in some supermarkets, it's probably close to 95% to 99%. Is it any wonder that when they test the population for phthalates in the urine, that a good majority of the population has phthalates in the urine? There are phthalates in the cord blood. There's phthalates in the amniotic fluid. There's phthalates in breast milk.
Incredible. When we are thinking about different toxins getting into us, are phthalates also coming out of heating up electronic circuitry, like people's personal computers and televisions, DVD players, those kind of things?
They are. A lot of people know about BPA, bisphenol A.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people, when they talk about this stuff, and I mentioned phthalates, people have never heard of phthalates because that's not the bad kid on the block. BPA is, but BPA is the tip of the iceberg. Put it this way: there's a paper that just came out early this year, again in Environmental Health Perspectives. Entitled, quote, "Most Plastics Release Estrogenic Chemicals." And hormone-disrupting chemicals are estrogenic chemicals. There was a paper that came out a couple of years ago about the phthalates that were leaching out of vinyl flooring. How many people in this country have especially sheet vinyl, kitchen or kitchen or bathroom vinyl flooring. And interesting enough, in that paper, they indicated that the phthalates that were coming out were considered S, as in Sam, SVOCs. People know VOCs, volatile organic chemicals / compounds. SVOCs are semi-volatile organic chemicals / compounds. They will off-gas from the product for the entire life of the product.
So that would be the difference in definition. The VOCs eventually stop off-gassing?
Mm-hmm, yep. And SVOCs, the entire life of the product. And let's go back to the phthalates in fragrances and in personal care products in general. The phthalates are used as fixatives for the fragrances. And that's why we've come to the conclusion, that's why it's very difficult to get a laundry fragrance out of anything. When my children were growing up, I have three children, when my children were growing up, I always went to the thrift shop, and, you know, we had, in the Amherst area, there were wonderful, wonderful European-style clothes, lots of cottons and wools at the thrift shop. So I outfitted my children from the thrift shop, because there was such wonderful clothing. You go to the thrift shop right now, and every piece of clothing is saturated with fragrance. And if you buy this clothing, you say, oh, well, you know, I'll just wash it. You can't get the fragrance out.
Yeah, I found that to be true as well, that the if I have a clothing that's secondhand that has a fragrance to it, I feel like mm-hmm. The best way to get it out is to leave it out in the rain for a week or two.
My sister left some clothes out for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
6 months, and they still smell the fragrance. The way that I recommend to patients, okay, let me tell you that that what I recommend to patients when you choose laundry detergent is I recommend that you get a laundry detergent at a health food store. And you want to choose a fragrance-free laundry detergent. The main product that I recommend is the brand Planet, Planet. And at all the co-op stores, they either have Planet brand or they can order it in. So it's Planet fragrance-free laundry detergent. And I prefer the powder because if you get liquid laundry detergent that's in a plastic bottle, you have a strong possibility of having phthalates. I don't know this for a fact, but you have a strong possibility of having phthalates from the plastic bottle leach right into your laundry detergent, so you're putting that on your clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an additional problem. I mean, the stuff is coming from everywhere. It's like all you can really do is minimize. You don't want to get a fragrance-free laundry detergent from a conventional supermarket because even the big dermatology books know that there's a huge problem in labeling of fragrance-free products. The manufacturers can actually call a product fragrance-free or scent-free, even though it has fragrances in it, because if the fragrance chemical is used for another purpose, that they can still call it fragrance-free.
Mm.
It's a really big problem. So that's why whether you go to Planet, that's my number one, or if you go to Seventh Generation, fragrance-free. Not lavender, not with anything with any essential oils in it. You don't really want anything with any of the citrus oils. Where are the citrus oils coming from? They're coming from from all the conventional citrus orchards down in Florida and California, and it's well known that down in Florida, at least, that they've spread a lot of sewage sludge on those citrus orchards. And what's being taken up by the trees from all the sewage sludge? Anybody's guess.
And not to mention the spraying of the orchards with the pesticides, correct?
That's right. And these environmental chemicals are, for the most part, they're fat-soluble. So that means plant oils and animal fats. And that's one of the things when I talk to people about essential oils, and they say, well, they're just natural. Well, if you bring in a bouquet of lavender flowers, what a wonderful fragrance. I love fragrance flowers. I'm a botanist. I have a whole garden full of fragrance flowers. But when you make lavender essential oil, as versus just having one lavender plant or making a sachet with lavender flowers and leaves ground up to have by your pillow, That's a totally different story. When they make essential oils, they take a whole room full of lavender plants and they concentrate the little bit of oil that's in each flower, each part of the plant. It's really, the analogy is that what happens in the food chain with mercury in the fishes, with PCBs in the fishes, where it's concentrated, the little fish are eaten by the bigger fish, which are eaten by a bigger fish, and you concentrate it as you go up the food chain. When you concentrate essential oils from a little bit from one plant to this little bottle of very concentrated oil, you're also concentrating all the chemicals that the plant has taken up from the air. We're not living back in Cleopatra's times. There's massive air pollution right now.
Are you seeing, have you seen in the literature anything about people who work extensively with essential oils and any, you know, similarities of health problems that they have, like massage therapists, for example, who use essential oils extensively?
That's a really good question. I haven't seen anything in the literature. I'm not sure it's been really looked at. But when I've gotten advertisements for conferences and workshops on aromatherapy, because it's assumed that because I'm a naturopathic medical doctor that I use aromatherapy, I stay far away from all these fragrances because I do not want my hormones being tampered with, none of them. And yet, in these advertisements, they say, help your patients to balance out their hormones. Okay, what that says is that those essential oils are hormonally active, just like the paper in endocrinology says.
Another question I have for you is, I've heard about aromatic benzene rings.
Mm-hmm.
Does that relate to fragrances at all?
It does relate because a lot of the chemicals, a lot of the chemicals in fragrances, when you look at them chemical-wise, they do have benzene rings in them. They're very complicated chemical structures.
Mm. And then, what about BTEX chemicals? Do those play a role in endocrine disruption or with fragrances?
What are you calling it?
Oh, BTEX.
I don't even know that. What is it?
I guess it's a term used for benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and xylene.
Okay. I've never heard that terminology. They're all solvents, and they're all VOCs, and they're all very toxic. nerve, especially very toxic to the bone marrow. But one of the reasons is I'm very interested in solvents. I have a strong research interest in solvents, and there's a lot of different kinds of solvents and in fragrance products, but in a lot of different kinds of products. For example, like I have a strong interest in marking pens, especially whiteboard dry erase markers.
Oh, my God.
Okay, and highlighter markers.
I mean, just from being in contact with those things, I feel a toxicity coming from the smell of that. It's just, like, incredibly, I can only explain it as ill-feeling or toxifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what kind of symptomology do you get from those whiteboard dry erase markers?
I mean, I just smelling it, it feels bad.
Yeah.
So
a lot of, and you see, a lot of teachers have told me exactly the same thing, that they quick open and close it and use it as at an arm's length. Mm. Now, here's a major problem. When I was, before I left Oregon, I did a phone conference on asthma-safe schools with the school systems in Oregon. And I talked about the problem with solvents. And the problem with solvents in general is it's fragrances and it's these whiteboard dry erase markers, Sharpie markers, highlighter markers. And all the schools in this entire country, from preschool on to professional schools, I encountered the same thing at my medical school out in Portland, Oregon, my naturopathic medical school, that all the schools, with the advent of computers, all eliminated their chalkboards, their blackboards, and they all put in white boards in all the schools, even in all the elementary schools. And every room has extensive white boards, and they all have these, basically they're all Expo brand white board dry erase markers. Now, I do actually have a paper that a friend of mine wrote on the acute toxicity of marking pens. And it's very interesting because they are the same people, Rosalind and Julius Anderson, that have, they ran a small world-class toxicology laboratory in West Hartford, Vermont. And they did a lot of toxicology work for businesses, and on the sideline, they did toxicology on household products. And their papers date back to 1996, 97, even before. They were some of the first people that did the carpet toxicology. And there's a lot of solvents coming off of carpets also. Solvents are coming from lots of different sources. And they did a paper, Toxic Effects of Air Freshener Emissions. That's back in, no, it was published in 1997. They also did a paper, Acute Toxic Effects of Fragrance Products in General, 1996. But they, I didn't pull out the paper for the marking pens, but they analyzed and found that they're basically solvent-based markers, and it's very deceptive on the packaging to say low odor, non-toxic. It's again a labeling issue, and I also want to discuss this labeling issue with Dr. Ann Steineman's paper on fragrance consumer products and undisclosed ingredients. And I already mentioned the labeling issue on the laundry detergent. Okay, there's a huge labeling issue that's going on lots of household products, including marking pens. They say low odor, non-toxic on all those marking pens. Again, dry erase whiteboard markers, highlighter markers, Sharpie markers, magic markers. They're all solvent-based markers. And there's a loophole, and they can say that because, as I tell patients, it won't kill you on the spot.
Mm.
Okay? And apparently, there was a news article that came out also in the Environmental Health Perspectives telling about Dr. Ann Steineman's paper, Fragrance Consumer Products and Undisclosed Ingredients, which was published in 2008. And all of her papers are available on her website. And it's Ann, A-N-N-E, Steineman, S-T-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N. She is a professor of civil and environmental engineering at the University of Washington in Seattle. And she's working with us. And this last edition of the fragrance brochure, she reviewed it, and we have a description of her work on fragrance consumer products and undisclosed ingredients. We say fragrance, and that's in quotes, ingredients are not required by any U.S. law to be listed on product labels. A 2010 study of 25 widely used fragrance consumer products identified 133 volatile organic chemicals, VOCs, 24 of which are toxic or hazardous under federal laws, and only one VOC was listed on any product label.
Mm.
And essentially what they did is say, well, if you won't tell us what's in it, we'll tell you what's in it, and we will use the process of gas chromatography, where you put a little bit of the sample into this machine, and it generates all these peaks of the different chemicals, and you can compare the peaks by computer to a whole library of peaks of identified compounds.
Wow.
That's how they were able to do it.
That's great. That's wonderful. Okay. That's possible.
And their most recent paper, which I couldn't find, so I can't give you the exact title right now, they looked at that the chemicals that were coming out of dryer vents when people used fragrance laundry detergents. It's just as bad a situation, Pete.
Let me tell the listeners, if you're out there listening, you have a question for Dr. Joyce Young or myself, or you'd like to make a comment on this topic, you're welcome to give a call. The phone number here is area code 315-859-4200. That's 859-4200. Another question I had for you is, when just going back to the plastics, and you're talking about the phthalates in the plastics, if you have a product that contains fat, like milk, is that something that's even more prone to collect the phthalates than something that's not fat?
It is, and yet most of the bottled water is in plastic bottles. And again, I'm keeping track of the peer-reviewed medical literature, and there was a paper that just came out about the tremendous amount of phthalates that they found in plastic bottled water. There was also heavy metals in that too, because one of the shocking things is they use heavy metals to make plastics.
Wow. I heard that the plastic bottles are only approved by FDA for one-time use.
Well, what's approved by the FDA, it's another three-letter agency. We shouldn't go into that right now.
So how do we get fragrances out of our lives? I mean, if people are out there who've already made decisions to limit all these fragrances, what can they do about the rest of the fragrancing world around them?
Okay, let me step back a little bit. I was going to help your listeners to figure out, how do you get the fragrance out of clothing, like when you've bought used clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And even I have clothes that I wear inside my house, and I have my public clothes. I never used to have to do that. And when I come from a public situation, even though my clothes do not smell like fragrance, I use plant laundry detergent, and I hang it out on the line. But when I come from, say, a concert, I just, or when I do a continuing medical education at the various hospitals, the hospitals have massive, massive air freshener in there, and my clothes just reek. And so I hang them out on the line first to try to air out. And then when I wash my clothes, I use a combination for any of the heavily fragranced clothes. I don't wash those in the same load as I wash my inside clothes and my bedding. But when I try to get the fragrance out, and I can't get the fragrance out, I don't pack my wash machine. I use a full scoop of laundry detergent. I use hot wash and warm rinse. And then I use, depending upon how bad it is, a certain amount of baking soda in with the laundry detergent. In order to fully get the soap and the baking soda out of your clothes, I put it on an extra light wash. Essentially, it's being rinsed three times in order to get it out. And for any kind of clothing that has been, that you get at like the thrift shop, mm-hmm. cotton clothing is worse, wool is better. It's really difficult to get it out because most of this clothing has been put through the dryers, and it. And my sister has said that when you look at the nature of fibers, cotton fibers are very different than wool fibers, and that's why it's really difficult to get it out. It's almost as if it's chemically bound to the cotton fibers.
And now, besides that, there's other concerns with cotton clothes, like the genetically engineered. Cotton now contains Roundup BT is in the cotton.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a lot of Roundup too because that's what they're using. It's Roundup resistant. I sleep on an organic cotton wool futon with no flame retardants. That's another whole issue. The issue of flame retardants, and I have organic cotton bedding, and I try to buy as much for inside my house. I try to buy as much organic cotton clothing next to my skin because you do absorb stuff right through your skin, and we've talked about that in our fragrance brochure. You can get wonderful organic cotton bedding. From Heart of Vermont. They're up in, where are they? It's Heart of Vermont, HEARTOFVERMONT.com. And they have Texas. See, there's even a problem. They have U.S. organic cotton bedding, I'm looking at their catalog, made of cotton grown in Texas and certified organic by the USDA and TDA. And this is a problem. There's a real problem because there's a lot of organic cotton that's coming from India and overseas, and it's really suspect. Mm. So that's why there used to be a lot of organic Texas organic cotton, and then it went down, and now they've made a resurgence again. So you really want to choose Texas organic cotton.
And what can people do to protect themselves from fragrances or all of these endocrine-disrupting or endocrine hormone disruptors?
Mm-hmm.
Is there certain foods or vitamins that people could ingest to remediate those types of effects?
The best way to work with that is all you can do is minimize exposure. That is the best way to minimize exposure. I don't recommend to patients any supplements at all. A lot of supplements actually contain phthalates. There was a paper that came out and it actually listed a lot of the pharmaceutical drugs also contain phthalates in them because they're used for lots of different purposes. The best way that you can help your body and especially to work with your liver, because all this stuff is processed in your liver and it goes out through your kidneys into your urine. And they say, oh, well, it doesn't last very long. It doesn't stay and stay and stay. But it has to be processed through your liver, so it's a burden on your liver. What my recommendation is you start to minimize chemical exposure from air, water, food, and consumer products. That means eating whole organic food, going to your local farmers markets, and to going to your co-op stores where you can actually buy whole organic food. You can buy seeds and rice and beans in bulk. You put them in a brown paper bag to get them home, and then when you get home, you put them in a glass jar to store them. When you store your food, you store any of your already cooked food in glass containers.
Not plastic.
Not plastic. If you're storing storing food, you don't put saran wrap around it. Even like when I'm out, I say, well, you know, if you want to bring a sandwich along, usually put it in a plastic bag. No, you can get wonderful brown wax bags at the health food, at the co-op stores.
I've seen those. The Mushroom Club likes to collect their mushrooms in those.
Yeah, the wax paper bags, but they're brown ones. They're not even white ones. And you can get brown wax paper. And so people have pressed my buttons. It's like, well, how do you know the wax isn't leaching? Well, it might. That's why all you can really do is minimize. But if the organic whole foods, nutrition, are the raw materials for helping your body to repair. You minimize chemical exposure. You don't want any carpets in your house. You want them, you know, if you have vinyl flooring, you know, see if you can change your flooring around. One of the other brochures that in our brochure series is on creating healthy indoor environments, homes, schools, and workplaces. And we itemize, it's like a checklist, and we itemize all the different sources of, well, a lot of different sources of problems that are out there. So your listeners might want to look at that, creating healthy indoor environments, homes, schools, and workplaces. Today's buildings may appear comfortable and safe. However, many construction techniques and materials, heating systems, and furnishings can be hazardous to your health. And so that your listeners don't get overwhelmed with any of this, because it can be an overwhelming thought, you do one thing at a time.
So maybe first would be to just look for some, like a laundry detergent that doesn't have a fragrance, maybe as a first step.
That's right. That's right. And you start to wean yourself off the use of plastics. You can get wide mouth quart mason jars very easily, and that's what you can store. You can store all of your rice and beans and millet and you learn how to cook all these things. So a lot of this is it's an awareness and a learning experience. And you start to transition yourself away from all these products. And I've told patients, if you don't know where the chemicals are coming from, then you can't make choices to avoid them. So that instead of getting overwhelmed with any of this information, to feel empowered, that even if you can't totally do everything that you want to do, You have to start somewhere. And that's the important thing, is that you start and that you feel empowered that, oh, change this over, and then I change that over. I didn't get to where I am overnight either. When I heard Professor Frederick von Saal, who's, again, another expert on endocrine hormone disrupting chemicals, especially BPA, when I heard him speak in Portland, Oregon, I walked out of that lecture almost shell-shocked and said, that's it on cans, when he described how there's BPA lining all the cans, including the organic cans. You put the food in the cans, you seal the cans, and then you heat it up and you drive all the BPA, the bisphenol A, right into the food. And I'm like, that's it on canned products, any kind of canned products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I used to eat canned beans, and now I've found that getting the dry beans and cooking them is even more flavorful.
Yeah, that's right. So it's really a learning issue as much as anything, and the openness to learning how you can do this so that you don't get overwhelmed.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about before we wrap it up?
Okay. One thing, we talked about the dry board, the whiteboard dry erase markers.
Yes.
Now let me just, since they're so common and it's a huge problem in schools, the classrooms, I did some substitute teaching when I came down here to the Cape, and I stopped substitute teaching because the classrooms were so toxic between, you could smell the solvents in the air. Mm. There has to be a huge resurgence in interest in how to protect our children because they're around all these solvents. But when I was at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland, Oregon for medical school, I was able to help them to understand what they were doing and to change over the usage of all of our white boards from the solvent-based dry erase markers to water-based Crayola markers.
And those work on the whiteboards?
They will work on all the whiteboards except for the real shiny ones. The real shiny ones, they seem to bead up and they won't work right, but a lot of them will. And people get really frustrated because you can't just use the eraser and erase it. We had a spray bottle of water and some paper towels, and you had to wet the paper towel and wash the board down and then let it dry, and then you could write again. The whole entire college changed over when I was there.
Incredible. I was thinking about this problem and thinking that you need an alternative that's not toxic. Do you think that grease pencils would work on a whiteboard like that?
I thought about grease pencils, but you still have to get them off. And let me also mention, in terms of those white boards, there's a real problem even with the dry erase markers because the pigment gets absorbed right into the board, and that's why when you look at the packages with the markers, they also come with a cleaning solution that's a major acetone cleaning solution. And that's a real problem because the acetone is probably permeating into the boards and becoming an SVOC. Here's another problem. I had a teacher from Vancouver, Washington, when I queried her a number of years ago about, was she concerned about these white board markers? And she said, yes, she was really concerned. And she was also concerned about the fact that after you erased them, that on the floor and on the little trays to hold the markers and the erasers, you could see this fine black dust.
Mm.
And she wondered whether this black dust was floating around in the air and what were the ramifications of breathing that. I've never seen that dealt with at all in any literature. I only have one paper on the marking pens, but that's just the solvent issue. And yet, when you go to the seashore and you see how different size rocks and sand are laid out on the beach, the particles in the air lay out exactly the same way, so that the heavier ones will fall down on the floor, but the very fine ones are floating around in the air, and you're breathing all that stuff in. So one first start is to get rid of your whiteboards, and if you're doing a presentation, get some Crayola water-based markers. Be aware, Crayola does make solvent-based markers also, but you can get Crayola water-based markers, and you use the paper flip charts. And if you're highlighting in your textbooks, you can use colored pencils.
What's the paper flip chart?
You know, like the newsprint flip charts?
Yes, yes, as a presentation, yeah. So writing on
for
those.
For presentations,
yeah.
Right. Because it's coming up with alternatives to the way you always used to do things.
Right. Well, that makes
sense. And, you know, if you want me to talk about chemicals in general on another program in terms of alternatives to help to empower people, you know, I can do that, too.
I would love to. So, Dr. Young, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. And if you wouldn't mind staying online for a moment.
Certainly.
I'll just wrap it up. So, once again, thank you.
You're welcome.